Facebook.com is our email address, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Now, one aspect of the suffragette struggle that might not have been highlighted in the new movie is how some of them chose to defend themselves with martial arts, a small group trained in jiu-jitsu. And it's this fact that provides the basis for Tony Wolf's series of graphic novels called Suffragitsu, Mrs. Pankhurst's Amazons. Tony, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
How much is known about how many women took part in these jiu-jitsu lessons among the suffragettes?
Well, we know that the Bodyguard Society comprised about 25 to 30 women. They were chosen from among the most radical, the most committed of the militant suffragettes. In terms of how many women may have practiced jiu-jitsu over this period of several years, it's really anybody's guess, probably in the hundreds.
Why was it decided that it was necessary for these women to take self-defense?
Well, basically, there was kind of an arms race going on between the radical movement, the Women's Social and Political Union, led by Emmeline Pankhurst, and the government and the police. And as the protests and the activism got more extreme, the government and police reprisals also became more severe. And aside from the necessity eventually of having to fight the police in hand-to-hand combat, there were also many instances of simply irate citizens, Londoners who wanted the status quo to remain the way it was, physically assaulting members of the radical suffrage movement. And so it was just a confluence of the availability of self-defense training and the necessity for it.
And did they often have to use it?
Surprisingly, yes. Particularly members of the bodyguard, because that was essentially what they were for. Their duty was to act as a kind of almost a secret service for members of the WSPU, who had been, particularly members who had been released on license from prison after hunger striking. And the Bodyguard Society was set up to protect those women and to essentially keep them free and keep them able to proceed in their activism for as long as possible, and that naturally drew them into conflicts with the police.
Why jiu-jitsu? Was that chosen specifically?
Well, it was really the only choice. The Asian martial arts had only been introduced to Europe about 10 years previously. They were introduced by a fellow called Edward William Barton Wright, who was a practitioner of, actually the inventor of something called Bartitsu. Barton Wright had been one of the very first Europeans, in fact, one of the very first Westerners to study Japanese martial arts. He trained in jiu-jitsu in Japan for about 3 years. And he imported that system to London in 1898 and set up Bartitsu as a kind of almost a mixed martial art, a cross-training system that combined jiu-jitsu with English boxing and also a very unusual method of self-defense with a walking stick or umbrella, which had been established by a fellow called Pierre Vigny. And his Bartitsu Club was quite the rage in London for several years. By 1930, 1914, when the suffragettes really needed self-defense, jiu-jitsu was the obvious go-to choice for them. It was the only Asian martial art that was available at that time. It was considered to be particularly suitable for women because it didn't require a great deal of upper body strength, for example. It was predicated on the idea of yielding to the opponent's strength and weight in order to win.
And kind of using it against them.
Precisely, yeah.
Yeah. Now, when you're writing a graphic novel or a trilogy of graphic novels about this, how much artistic license did you feel you could take or couldn't take?
Well, I was very keen to incorporate as much of the real history as I plausibly could. The first issue of the graphic novel is very closely based on real history. The second two chapters, or the second two issues, move further away from real history. There's an event at the end of issue one that is a radical departure from what really happened. And that sort of spins the story off into something more like an action-adventure alternative history story. But even so, most of the characters are lightly fictionalized versions of historically real people, with the only real major exception is the protagonist. The leader of the Amazons in my story is a young lady called Persephone Wright, and she's a purely fictional character, but even so, she was directly inspired by a number of real women.
Right, okay. And so by the end of your trilogy, have you ended up in quite a different place if there's an element of counterfactual history here?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, Actually, no. it ends up very much where real history did end up at this point, right at the beginning of the First World War. There is an implication in the fiction and the graphic novel that the Amazons persisted as a kind of an early spy unit within the First World War, which did not happen in real history. In real history, with the outbreak of the First World War, Emmeline Pankhurst no longer needed a bodyguard team, and so the Amazons, the bodyguards, were disbanded at that point. But in fiction, obviously, you can take some artistic license, and I thought it would be nice to allow them to continue their adventures, at least implicitly.
Okay, well, indeed, we might see some more of those adventures. They are called Suffragitsu, Mrs. Pankhurst's Amazons, a graphic novel trilogy. Tony Wolfe, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Back in a